Welcome to the latest edition of our Fixed Interests podcast series. I'm Thomas Roekmaker, head of Asia-Pacific Sovereign Ratings. Today, I'm joined by Chris-Janus Krustens, a director in Fitch's Sovereign Team and lead analyst for Pakistan. We'll be discussing the outlook for Pakistan after the recently held elections. So Chris-Janus, how does Pakistan's election outcome affect its credit profile?
We would look at it in two key dimensions. First of all, the impact on political stability, always a bit of a concern for us in Pakistan, and the impact on policies, on what the government will actually do and how that will affect external funding, which is a very key aspect of the credit. In the first instance, the election result is much closer than expected, especially given the imprisonment of PTI's leadership and the security crackdown that took place in Pakistan after the protests last year. So despite all of this, PTI and its related candidates performed very, very strongly, and PMLN and its allies received a weaker mandate, and there were allegations of vote rigging and so on. But protests against the result have died down. A government has been formed, and it appears that we are past the greatest period of uncertainty. In the second instance, in terms of economic ideology, we never thought the differences between the contestants in the election were very large in the first place. So in terms of an IMF program and the policies needed to support that, all of the parties are on a similar page, and the biggest risks come from political environment and what that might do to the government's ability to act. So the government, given the election results, will have to tread carefully. It has a weaker mandate than expected. Also noteworthy that the Pakistan People's Party has chosen to support the government without taking up any ministries, and perhaps this is also a reflection of the government's weaker mandate.
And how does Fitch assess the policy platform of the new government? Is it any different from the previous two?
It looks like this second administration of Shehbaz Sharif is continuing the path of the first administration, which lasted from early 2022 until autumn 2023, and the interim government that we had from late 2023 into early 2024. This new government finished the interim IMF program. The prime minister has ordered expedited negotiations on a new program. They are continuing with, for example, the privatization drive, which was begun under the interim government and which is likely to be a significant channel for any additional GCC assistance in the years to come. Some of the names in the new Sharif administration are also similar to the ones in the old one. Perhaps the most important difference is that we now have a technocratic finance minister, a former banker, although Mr. Ishak Dar does remain in the cabinet as foreign minister and still wield a lot of influence. Perhaps this makes it less likely that the government could turn to exchange rate management, which was one of the key beliefs of the previous finance minister. But as always in Pakistan, it is difficult to tell. Should be noted that the army does remain a very important political force in Pakistan, irrespective of who heads the civilian government.
So what about Pakistan's relations with the international partners, perhaps most importantly the IMF? So how do we see that after the elections?
Well, Pakistan will need a longer-term and more structural IMF program to secure continued availability of funding. And this program will be more difficult, and the policies required will be more difficult to implement. And this would be the case irrespective of who heads the government. There is a risk that this weaker-than-expected support base for PMLN undermines reform implementation sometime down the road. That said, there is more breathing space for the government following the elections, and there should be some space to implement some reforms. There's an interesting parallel with 2013-2016, probably Pakistan's most successful IMF program, and that was under Nawaz Sharif and negotiated right after the elections.
So when do we expect a new IMF program? The Prime Minister has called for quick negotiations. Do we make of that? And does the government have enough time and financing space for negotiations?
We think a new agreement, say a new staff level agreement, is unlikely before June or perhaps even early July. June is the usual timeline for the authorities to present their budget, and previously there have been many cases where there's a lot of back and forth between the government and the IMF regarding the details of the budget. Although they have a good recent track record of cooperation under the interim government, and that will certainly help, we don't think that the IMF would take its chances. The interim government did lay out some groundwork for the reforms that will have to be done, and none of these issues are new. There's tax reform, there's energy sector reform, broader reforms to the administration, and also privatization of loss-making state-owned enterprises. So the government knows what needs to be done. And in terms of space for negotiations, well, we note that the net reserves of the State Bank of Pakistan have actually been pretty stable at $8 billion so far this year. The government just repaid a $1 billion euro bond, recently reached a staff-level agreement on the final review of the interim program, which in the coming weeks should unlock $1.1 billion in disbursements. And there are no big, chunky maturities between now and the end of June, except one PBOC deposit, which is likely to be rolled over. Also, current account deficits have been contained. Pakistan actually posted quite a large current account surplus in December, although that went back into deficit subsequently. So we think there is time, absent any new shocks, for them to negotiate until June or July. That is not to say that Pakistan's external position is strong. I mean, this level of reserves is still very weak.
And finally, could you say something about the outlook for the implementation of reforms? So to what extent can Pakistan really reform?
It's true that Pakistan has gone back and forth on this, and various governments from across the political spectrum have alternatively started out on a reform path, and they have often shot themselves in the foot, potentially for reasons of what look like political expediency. At the moment, since late last year, there seems to be recognition that Pakistan simply has no other choice. All the other options are exhausted. The IMF and other donors are not going to provide funding unless there is some reform commitment. That said, the policy outlook gets more difficult the further out we go, and any initial success for reforms will almost inevitably raise the risk of some reversal down the road when Pakistan's situation improves and stabilizes. Pakistan remains a very important partner for the Gulf and a very important case for the IMF, and it's very important for regional stability. We think that there is going to be a lot of desire among its partners to maintain stability and keep Pakistan stable, even if the solutions that are implemented from policy perspective, even if they're not truly long-lasting, and even if there is that risk of reversal down the road. All that to say that there's potentially some runway for measures to be taken right now in this period, right after the election, although risks remain.
Well, thanks for your insights, Christianus, and thank you all for listening. For more information on our ratings and on our research on Pakistan, please visit us at fitchratings.com. We hope you will join us for the next edition of Fixed Interests.